Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Gotry Straight, No Chaser. Now, you know what I always do is I always do my little housekeeping to let everyone know where they are, how they can retrieve another recording of this because it's archived on blogtalkradio.com. And I tell you the number again and how you can then call in and ask a question. So let's start at the very beginning. We are on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And the number that you can dial in and ask a question tonight of my wonderful guest, and I will get to her in a few minutes in this day after Women's Day. This is so great. The number to dial in would be 516-453-6063, and then you press the number 1. That will then indicate to me that you have a question, and then I will be able to put you on the air and you ask the guest a question. Now, to my guest this evening. I have not known her those many years, not decades, but we've known each other for a little while. And basically, we got to know each other by doing volunteer work and her being the actually head of a foundation of one of the companies that we met in boardrooms. And watching her be as personable, as professional, as lovely, we became really good friends. And I know I say this, all my guests are fabulous, but what's really wonderful about being on these committees and boards is that you really get a chance to meet some of the most wonderful people. They're selfless. They are looking out for how to contribute to the community, outreach programs, all of these things. Now, my guest, her name is Jane George. She, I have to tell you, has some of the most wonderful credentials. So she was in charge of a $60 million capital campaign for one of the companies that we both were involved in, ArtsQuest. And she's launched many events to support St. Luke's Hospital. Now, those of us who are in the Lehigh Valley will be familiar with her work. Those of us who are in L.A. and New York, I see your numbers on my board here. You won't be as familiar with her now, but you will by the time we finish because she's contagious. Now, the other thing is that she's the Regional Affairs Director of PPNL. That's our equivalent to Con Edison for those of you who are in New York City. She was the executive director of the ArtsQuest Foundation. She was assistant vice president of government relations and capital development. She was director of development at St. Luke's. I can go on and on. She's got MPA and BBAs and all of these initials behind her name. And I can just continue to say all of these things about her, but instead, I want you to meet the person, not just the career, of my friend, my good friend, Miss Jane George. Hello, Jane.
Well, hello, Lenny. That was one of the nicest introductions I have ever heard. Thank you. You are so gracious and friend. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, but you deserve it. I am blessed with having such wonderful friends to come on this program, friends who listen. I've come to recognize some of the numbers, friends who I've known for years, who are always loyal, who listen to this across the nation. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me. And to invite you in and for you to say yes, to come to talk on this show, to have a conversation with me on my program, is like a dream come true. It's like we're talking on the telephone. And people need to know that our schedules have been so busy that this is the way that I get a chance to talk to you, because we have not had a chance to sit down and talk to one another for a very long time.
Well, we haven't.
So
and
how
I have
are
to
you, start... Jane? How are you? You know, now that we're having a conversation, how are you doing? How's work? How is work over there?
First of all, my friend Lenny, it is my honor and my privilege to be a part of this program. I listen to your shows and an amazing program that you put together, and I feel so honored that you selected me. But I have been absolutely fine. You know, I feel as an individual, it's great that we're coming out of COVID. It's great that theaters are opening up again and are opening up again. We were just in New York City and we saw Hamilton. We have tickets to see Music Man. And it makes you feel alive that we are starting to come out of this COVID that we've been in for 2 years.
I agree. I think carefully and being cautious is important, but I think that there is a need for us to get back some of the socialization that we had, that and also to recognize, though, that these 2 years of this pandemic have opened up other options for us and how to communicate. I have my experiences in the last 2 years been able to talk to people in other countries, participate in programs that I would never be able to participate in because of the programs that have been invented since the pandemic was created. So a little bit about the hybrid is important. And that's what it is. A lot of it is that I haven't seen a lot of people because of work, because my work then is a lot of my studio and then dealing with a lot of the other businesses that I do, and that being cautious about our whole socialization. So this is one of the ways that I get a chance to catch up. But not only catch up with that, before we were on the air, that you know, last week it was so interesting. I was talking to a wonderful woman, Annette Isendorf, and we found out who does a lot of work at the Y, and she's an author and a film historian, and in digging into her life, I found out that I actually took French from her mother at Hunter College, French literature.
That is amazing.
And
that's amazing.
It was amazing. And at first she thought, well, you know, I mean, first of all, there weren't a lot of classes in French literature. You know, it's not like 16 classes in it. There might have been maybe three professors. But when I could describe her mother's, so her procedures, her protocol, her continence, how she held herself, she realized I had her mother for my senior year in college, and had enjoyed it. And her mother had made an indelible impression upon me because she was so professional and, unlike a lot of professors, did not have a desire to want to be any cool and hip. She would come in crisp and, you know, with suits on and everything. And she made an impression on me. Well, that's what I want to find out tonight. I want to find out tonight through the arts, what is it that I don't know about Jane George? So I'm going to create this arc for us. And I want to make this journey from where you started talking about your parents all the way to where you are. Now, let's talk about your parents. Tell me their name. Tell me a little bit about them. Tell me a little bit.
Sure. So I'm very fortunate. My parents are both still alive, both active. They're in their 80s, and they've been married since they were in their early 20s. I grew up outside of Philadelphia. They also grew up outside of Philadelphia. And they were, you know, I had a very, you know, a childhood like that was in, you know, 1970s type of childhood. And I'll tell you, you know, my love of the art really started with my grandmother and my great aunt, who introduced me at a very early age on how to embroider and needlepoint and sew and quilt. So my love of the art really started and continues on the textile side and, you know, the fabrics and the threads. And like, in fact, the sweater that I'm wearing tonight is a sweater that I completed yesterday. So I still, for me.
Oh, good. We'll be able to see that on the video part. Good, 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 good. Oh, I'm very glad. Go ahead.
So that's where it started for me, really, was, you know, the comfort that I found in creating things out of yarn and fabric and, you know, using a sewing machine and, you know, a crochet hook. And, you know, macrame was so big in the 70s. I made so many macrame plant holders. And, you know, I was fortunate that I had, you know, a grandmother and a great aunt who took the time to teach me those things.
Well, when you say took the time, was it something they did regularly? Was that culturally passed on in your family? Quilting is in my family, too. My grandmother used to send quilts from Florida to us up north because she thought that we would get so cold. And I still have a couple of them now there. You know, I carefully keep them. Yes.
They're a treasure.
So was that something that they did for the family? Is it something that they did periodically? And how did you get included into it? And was anybody else in your family included in that?
So it was very much a thing that they would do after dinner. You know, they would sit around and pick up their embroidery, or they would, you know, pick up, you know, their knitting. And so, you know, I would be there, and so they would, you know, teach me. You know, they would take scraps of fabric and show me how to embroider something. My grandmother and my aunt, you know, made curtains and slip covers and things like that. So I would watch them, and they would teach me. And it was something that I picked up, you know, because I really loved it. And so I continued to do it. In fact, my great aunt, after she died, we sold her house recently, and we were taking down curtains. And I found curtains that the two of us had made. And she didn't believe in sewing machines. Yeah, she didn't believe in sewing machines, and they were all hand sewn. And I remember sewing them with her. And so, you know, as I said, you know, I've always been on the, you know, the visual side of the arts, and in the textile side.
Yes. See, this is something, again, that's what I mean. This is such a discovery for me, all this art that I create with all of you who come on. That is so fascinating to me. So, you know, usually the conversation is with people who have been introduced to the arts through some kind of instrument or voice or, you know, or performance. But now this is visual artistry and textile art. And so this is a whole nother way of really perceiving art. Art that you can really touch. It's a very
right.
physical thing. Did you learn any particular discipline from working with them on these on those kinds of projects?
You know,
you're a very disciplined person. So I'm trying to figure out, where did you get the discipline from? Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a really interesting question, and I had never really thought about it. But, you know, the way that you phrased it, you know, when you think about it, you know, if you made a mistake, you had to pull it out and figure it out and start again. And, you know, I'm assuming that those were very subtle life lessons that I was learning and not even knowing, you know, they became part of who I am. I hadn't even thought of that until you just said that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what this is about, to really explore how the arts really penetrates our lives without us really realizing it. Subliminally, they come in, the arts on all different levels come into our arts, into our lives, and they formulate us, they shape us, they mold us, these arts. And we don't realize it. And I really want to accentuate it, only because when we then think about it, we then have more respect for the arts and care about it and it can sustain it more. So now let's go on this journey. So you're a little girl, and you're a great aunt, and your grandmother has taught you to do this. Now, what about your mother and your father? What did they do? Did they have any art connections, or did you go to the theater? Did they take you to any kind of museums or anything?
So my father was and continues to be a great lover of Broadway shows. And his father and he would sit at night and listen to albums and music of the Broadway shows and go see them. My father's very favorite show is South Pacific. And we would sit up late at night listening to South Pacific. And he would tell me stories about how he and his father would, you know, saw South Pacific and they would listen to it. But he had all these albums of all these Broadway shows that he absolutely loved. And then conversely, he also was one of those hip fathers that loved the Beatles, loved the Rolling Stones, loved all of the Moody Blues. I remember one of the biggest fights my parents had was my father went out and spent, I think money must have been tight, and he spent whatever little bit of money they had on a new Beatles album. And I remember my mother being so angry and my father saying, "But Ellen, you don't understand. This is a classic. Jane needs to hear this. The Beatles are really an important part of today's, you know, culture." And I still have that album. And, you know, I still have White album, you know, from the Rolling Stones. And so we would sit at night and, I mean, till late and listening to not only Broadway shows, but then also the Beatles. And then this isn't necessarily classic art. But when Saturday Night Live came on, he would come home early from dinner with my parents so the two of us could watch Saturday Night Live together back in the 70s and 80s.
It's amazing the effect that the arts has on us, and we really don't realize how we shaped our days. I mean, I remember being young and understanding there were only three networks then. I don't, you know, I'm dating myself, you know, people would know. I knew the schedule of every show that I wanted to see, what was on ABC, CBS, NBC, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way Monday through Friday. I understood it shaped my life, and it shaped, I believe, my admiration for that medium. As you know, before I really got into live theater, I had an admiration for the television, the practice of film on television. So now,
and that performance.
Let's keep going. Let me see. I'm being nosy. All right. So now let's take you. When you were in, I'd say middle school, high school, were you involved in anything that was technically theatrical, or were you into the textiles, or was there anything in art that you favored in school?
So I was very involved in theater from middle school and all through high school. And so I was always in the musicals. I didn't have a very good voice, so I was always in the chorus for the musicals. But for the shows, I was always in them. My very favorite role was Arsenic and Old Lace. And I played the young girl, the young niece.
Yes, the young niece. It comes in.
And I was a sophomore in high school, and it was the very first time I kissed a boy, and it was on stage. Because, and I remember being so nervous when we were in practice and rehearsal, and that scene was going to come up. And I remember I went to the director and I said, I went to a girls' academy. And so I was a little shy around boys as well. And I went to the director and I said, you know, I'm really worried about this. And he was wonderful. And he had a closed rehearsal. I don't know if he told the boy. I don't know what. But made it very easy for me. But I remember just being absolutely scared to death about that kiss on stage.
Isn't it interesting how the arts have ushered in romance into your life? That's very, very interesting.
Now, I haven't thought about that for years.
Yeah, well, see, I'm telling you, when you went to college, now this MPA, explain that to me. Explain what the MPA is. Okay.
Sure. So I went to undergraduate at Ohio University and studied marketing. And, you know, that was, you know, a great career for me. But when I was in my mid to late 40s, I had always wanted to go to graduate school. And I never had had the opportunity. You know, I was raising four kids. My husband, you know, served in the Army. So it was during the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. So he was away a lot. And I remember one day thinking, you know, all my friends, to celebrate that they were 50, were doing things like, you know, getting expensive jewelry, buying a second home, you know, all these things. And I thought, okay, do I want to make myself to say, like, I've arrived? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get my master's, and I'm going to do really, really well, and I'm going to go to the best school I can get into, and I'm going to enjoy every single second of it. So I got a master's of public affairs, and it correlated very well with what I do. So it was all about external facing audiences and coordinating and working with the community. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, as I got older, I realized what an economic driver the arts are and how the arts unify communities. And they, you know, not only do they spark creativity, but they have such a social impact in, you know, civic engagement and helping scores and schools. And so with an MPA, I was able to help advocate in those areas.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me now, because a lot of your work is outreach, and you're also very community conscious. Mm-hmm. Whenever you get into any position, you're always thinking about how whatever it is can affect the community. So now that makes a lot of sense to me at that point in time. So yeah, you're in college. You've gone to undergrad. When did you meet your husband?
We were college sweethearts.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
And so that lasted all the way to, and now we've got you where you've got your children. What practices did you experience when you were a child, did you pass on to your children?
So very definitely the sewing and quilting and knitting and crocheting to my daughter. So my daughter is a pediatrician, and when she gets home from a long shift, she picks up her knitting needles and sits there and knits. And you know, she finds it very relaxing. She's also a very talented embroiderer. She told me a story that when she was in residency and she was in the OR with a doctor, and it was the first time that she was, he said, you know, I'm going to teach you how to close. And it was the first time she was doing it. And he said, is this really the first time you've ever closed? Your stitches are phenomenal. And she said, my mother taught me how to sew at a very young age.
Look at that. Look at that.
That says
it all then. That really says a lot of what the arts, how it was passed down in the generation, and how the knowledge was transferred to a career that really has an affiliation of the arts, but it's not that connected. And that's the stitching, the careful learning of stitching then was passed on to her when she decided that she wanted to be in medicine. Well, I'm through with that. I mean, I think that's an amazing story. People don't realize. Does she realize how that what that connection is? Do you think does she really think about that connection much, or is it through osmosis? You just
she definitely knows that. And then, you know, the other thing that a lot of people, I think, don't think about is that, you know, medical students and the medical world is learning that the humanities and the arts create a more rounded physician. And many medical schools are requiring art literature, art history into their curriculum, so that physicians can have better bedside manner and be more compassionate. In fact, I remember when my daughter was studying anatomy, she had this program called Sketchy, and it was the art so that they could remember anatomy. And it was amazing, an art program. There's also medical students use coloring books that create, you know, different parts of the body so that they can remember them. And it's all art-based.
That's amazing. You know, it's amazing to see the connection that happens from one career to the other. I know that also that there are programs now that a lot of the hospitals in a lot of the areas are employing actors to come in and create scenarios,
yes,
so that they become familiar and sensitive to how they are dealing with their bedside manner. And it becomes a very important component as to when they finish their residency. If they go on past that, if they don't pass it, they have to repeat it back again. The evaluation is there. And I think that's a very important component, that theater plays a very large, the arts plays a very large part in acquainting doctors as to how they should speak to their patients.
Absolutely.
And that how we should also regard the patients, how we need to be aggressive advocates of our health, how we need to come in with information and questions and question a different kind of methods and methodologies that people want to recommend for us. I think that it really all ties in together. Now, I'm going to say this so that, you know, you don't know. We've already gone past our half hour. See how quickly it goes?
I had no idea.
Right. So, yeah, I know. I know it does. But it's really great, because now I want to get into how the arts now has influenced the career that you created for yourself in the last 20-some years, you know.
Sure.
The things that you've done, the organizations you've been in, and how the arts filters into that. Because it was indeed, that is how we met. With both of us being involved in an institution that was of the performing arts. And why was that attractive to you? But what did you do before? So now talk to me about the first job that you had and how the arts really played into that. Because I really want people to know the extent of your experience and what ultimately what you do here, which is a very important level job. But go on. Talk to me about the first job.
When you were first talking about that jobs and how the arts, you know, influenced, right away I remembered that one of the first projects I had at St. Luke's Hospital was we were building a brand new hospital. And one of the things that was very, very important to the president of the hospital was having art throughout the hospital, because he knew that art was very healing and important to the patient.
Yes.
And so
yes.
We started a art rotation program with the Allentown Art Museum. And what we did was we had art rotating through the rooms and through the hospital, so that especially patients that were there for a long period of time, they had different art to experience and to see. So it wasn't the same art all the time. We also introduced through a very talented doctor who I think
you and I both know, and he introduced a program called, I think it's called Art on the Go or Art Cart, and it's the artist comes to the patient and helps them create art, because there's been so many studies that show that it helps the healing and helps patients to recover and heal faster. So as far as, you know, my job, you know, that was very important in the hospital. And then, of course, going to where we both met, important to me, because through that organization that you and I both knew, it showed the importance of creating community, economic development, the revenue, creating tourism, unifying communities and bringing people together, you know, improving the well-being. And so I've been so fortunate in that every job I've had, some form of art has been there. And, you know, it just kind of happened, or many times it was just the way art is. It was a collaboration of thoughts.
It's an amazing thing that how art does bring people together. You know, one of the things that I admired when we worked together was your relentlessness in trying in pushing the capital campaign that that was being done at the time, and making people understand the impact that the arts had on their lives and making them accountable for it. A lot of us have really enjoyed wonderful lives on a lot of different levels, a lot of different standards, and a lot of it had to do with what the art taught us. And giving back is a very important component. Giving back is one of the most satisfying things, I believe, that can happen. And you can do it in the arts. I think medicine does it when the doctors actually perform operations to help, you know, extreme cases. But there are occupations that do favor that. But in our occupation, when you have been influenced by the arts, it is a real easy way to say thank you by just trying to get people to be interested in the arts and sustaining, whether it's visual arts. Now, you've talked now about three different kinds of arts. You've talked about textile arts. You've talked about visual arts. And you talk about performing arts. I mean, South Pacific is one of my very favorite shows, and I share that with your father and tell him one of my favorite songs in it is "You Have to Be Taught." It's a magnificent show, and you know, tell him the story. He needs to know the story, because I tell him I worked with Joshua Logan, who was the director of it. He was fabulous. I worked with him a while before he passed away, and he and his wife Netta, and they were wonderful to me. And he told me the story of how that song was to be taken out of the show, because in the time period when that was established and was composed, they thought the people that control things thought that it was not appropriate. And they fought and fought and fought and kept that song in the show. So tell him for me, please, that we share a love of South Pacific, and specifically because you have to be taught to love and hate, you know, is a very, very important song for me. And I use it when I talk to children, because they, you know, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, you have to be taught to love or hate the people that your relatives hate. You know, the lyrics are just magnificent. Absolutely.
I'm going to go look at them again. I'm going to go look at them.
Yes, please. I mean, I recommend that anyone in the education occupation really look at those. And if we're allowed now, I mean, I don't know what the parameters are and censorship is about what you can say in schools, but that is one. I usually have the young students that I, when I do a masterclass with smaller, younger students, I have them read that and tell me what they think that it means. It's such a masterpiece of how we should really treat one another and what we should do, how we should teach our children. Yeah. So now that, you know, we've gotten you now to what you do for a living, the outreach that you're doing. We talked about your introducing me to people who are in charge of diversity groups, and I look forward to possibly meeting some wonderful, wonderful people that you work with. Where do you think you want to go now? Not that you want to leave this job, but what do you think you want your footprint to be? And what are you thinking about doing to make that footprint happen?
Well, you know, you touched on it a little bit a couple minutes ago. You know, I think that all of us in the community that love, admire, appreciate, and understand the art, we really have a responsibility to make sure that they continue. And if they're here not only for us now, but for the next generation. And so I feel very strongly that at this part of my life, to make sure that I take advantage of all those opportunities to financially support the arts, to make sure that they're here forever. And to also, on that same line, to fight for them. Because so often, the arts are the first things that are cut. They are the first things that are not funded. They are the first things that are not supported. And you and I both know that the arts make a community. They take, they
Absolutely. You know, I feel sometimes like I'm a PBS commercial telling people to invest in the arts and make sure that you appreciate the arts. What you as regional affairs director of PPNL, I mean, tell people what that is. Because, you know, when I have people come on, I have them describe what their jobs are so people can see how close and how far it is from the arts. So explain to them what you do.
Sure. So, you know, first and foremost, PPL primary job is to make sure that all 1.4 million customers in the 29 counties that we serve receive their power, their electricity, in efficient, affordable, and reliable ways. And so my job is to make sure that I support that mission. And some of the ways I do that is, you know, working with communities to make sure that they have reliability, to make sure that if they're experiencing outages and things like that, that they're taken care of. But the other part of my career is my work with the PPL Foundation. And at PPL, we're very fortunate that we have a very strong and important foundation that believes in the importance of giving back to the community that we serve. And so our foundation supports organizations like Arts Club, supports children, supports making our communities more sustainable. And in my role, I get to help to decide where that money is invested so that our communities can continue to thrive. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that I'm so proud of what I get to do for PPL. I get to, you know, be a part of our corporate mission of making sure that we deliver electricity, because we all know how important that is. But I also get to be a part of the culture. You know, one of the, you know, important programs that we work on is mentoring fifth grade students in the Allentown School District. You know, and that while it might not seem like art, it really is, because you're listening to them, the art of listening, the art of communicating.
Let me ask you this a little bit about that program. When you were mentoring fifth grade, you said fifth grade students, correct?
Correct.
Why did you, why was the fifth grade picked?
That's a really good question. So when we started this program, it was during COVID, and PPL said, you know, we need to do something positive, during this COVID. It also was, you know, after the atrocity and the killing of George Floyd, we wanted to do something positive. And we realized through research that in fifth grade is kind of where students are beginning to make decisions and decide who they are. And so we worked with the principals and we said, you know, hook us up with or match us with students that, you know, need just a little, like, that aren't necessarily, you know, struggling or they're not exceptional, but just those ones that might slip through the cracks, that might need just a little friend, someone to talk to. And we're in our second year of this program, and it's just amazing. You know, the PPL employees who sign up to be a part of this program and want to do it are committed and dedicated, and they really feel that it's like a gift that they get to do this for the students.
That's amazing. You know, so many times what I find sitting on many different diversity committees or boards is that the solution to diversity is add water and stir. In other words, it's right. Cosmetic. You know, let me put somebody there that looks like they can represent a particular group, whether it's age discrimination or race discrimination, sex discrimination, whatever it is, and then that's the end of the movement.
Yeah.
It is
right.
What I find that has to happen is that there has to be a continual arc of follow through, that you have to follow through and find out what that mentoring does, what that program does, how it influenced that child, how and in it. That all is a way of influencing them with artistic ways as well as administrative ways to give them another way to look at the world. And there's nothing, there's no, I think, more important in entertainment entity than the arts that can do that for children. And along and coupled and married with an institution like PPNL or Air Products or all of these companies, if we do that, and especially in our area, and I will say this specifically for the Lehigh Valley, you know I'm speaking specifically for the arts, we have a need to make sure that the children who are going to certain schools who are in economic situations that they are not in schools that have a great development of arts departments, that we allow them or that we give them the opportunities to be able to experience the arts so that they start on an equal level. That is diversity.
Absolutely.
Be able, you know, equity. That's the whole thing. Inclusiveness, those are the important things. And so I admire what you all are doing. I'd like to hear more about it. I'd love to even have a program talking about it, you know, because and how it is included, how the arts are included in that, because we all need to know how all of that works in our society. We know, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, I created a chorus through the education system of Allentown, and then it wasn't allowed to continue because of the economic status of it. And even if there was no cost to it, none of the musicians wanted to do anything. I didn't want any money. No, but it was what it cost in order in the system, in order for those children to be fed, to the insurance of it. There was no school bus. All of those things. We needed a program in order to be able to do that. That's something that should be ongoing, that these children really get, because it was, for me, It automatically happened. There was no school without the arts. I mean, we had so many programs that kept us so busy after school that my father used to ask, is there any time that you come home at 3 o'clock? I mean, you know, that's what you want those parents to say. Well, my child has this and this and this and this in every school, in every school. And the arts, I believe, should be a leading factor in that. And we propose that we are an industry of creating a safe haven, a creative haven for our constituents, and children are our constituents, the most critical of them all are children, because they know when you're good and when you're not. And
that's right.
We need to really get back to that. But don't let me get on the soapbox, because
get on that. But what you were just saying is what I mean by fighting for the arts, right? Like, we have to fight for them so that they aren't taken away from children, right? Because that's an excellent example of where the next group of children were denied that wonderful program you have, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, you know, the next stage of my love of the arts is fighting for them, allowing them to continue, because we don't want to become a society where there aren't arts, because what would we be without them?
Final question. First of all, I want to say we're almost down to the last 10 minutes. So there are people on the board. I welcome you all. If you all have a question, this is the time to ask the question now, because this will give Jane the opportunity to take the time to answer your question. So if I see a hand up, I will definitely go right to it. But yet, I don't see anything yet. So answer me this. What do you think your life would be without the arts?
I think it would be very flat. I think it would not have exuberance. I don't think it would be colorful. I don't think it would be dynamic. I don't think it would be creative. I think it would be dull. I think of a grainy black and white picture photo as opposed to a vibrant, colorful, there and life in it.
Yes. I think, you know, I think one of the things that I think we should think about is what our lives would be if we didn't have the ability to turn on the radio, listen to music, or download music the way that everyone does now. If we didn't have all of the variety of channels to look at on television and on our devices, what would we be like? You know, people don't realize, you take all of that away, what would you do when you were waiting to catch a plane and you decided you wanted to download something, look at that on your device? You know, all of those things are in jeopardy if we don't prepare in our lives to make sure that we've prepared it for the next generation. It will fall away. It will fall away like unattended history will fall away if you do not continue oral history or anything else. It is very, very important. So that's why I do this every week. I find the most fascinating people like yourself. I believe I have to, I have to congratulate you, because you're always on some committee, heading something to give back to some outreach program of some, you know, community. And I can just say that this is my friend, and I know her, and she is genuine and transparent and really does want this to be a success. And so I thank you for all the work that you've done that I know.
Right, you know, my friend, right back at you.
I just think it's so very important that we acknowledge that. This month being Women's Month, and yesterday being Women's Month, people celebrated doing some outrageous things. I just, you know, I did my business, and, you know, I did my regular business, and then I did some very, very classic things that my mother taught me. I started cleaning different parts of my house, and it was very, very grounding. Because you can get lost in a lot of the meetings and the talking to people of power and all of that. And you need to bring yourself back to our reality. And my friends will laugh and they'll say, "Well, not with those nails. I used my gloves. Thank you very much." So I did.
Well, good. I'm glad you used your gloves, because you have beautiful nails.
You do.
Thank you.
You have beautiful nails. I always admire your nails.
Thank you. Well, you know, one of the things that we have in common, too, is our love of fashion. Now, you know that.
Yes.
You
are
yes.
always the most beautifully dressed person in the room. Always.
Well, I don't know, because you come in there dressed beautifully yourself. But that's something that's another part of the arts that I think that drew us together. Our love of being able to, you know, I think for me, just dress up is a wonderful thing. It doesn't have to be something for everyone. It's not for everyone. You know, a lot of people say to me, Lenny, you know, why do you always have to look da da da? I said, it's not always for me. It's just who, you know, what it is that I do. That's in my wardrobe. That's always been that way. But that attracted me to you also. The fact that we share that you have a love of fashion, vintage fashion, contemporary fashion. We both have a love of that. And that's what is really, really important. And it continues in the arts. Exactly. It does continue in the arts. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that I asked last week, and I like this question. It's a Dan Rather question.
Okay.
Is there any question? I love Dan Rather. I just think that he is the genius of doing conversation. And if anybody has the opportunity to listen to him, have a conversation with anyone, I would recommend it because he interviews some of the most interesting people. And he's always the most charming man around who does that. One of the questions I steal from him is there any question that you would like me to ask you that you've thought about over the years that you say, I wish somebody would ask me that so I could explain to them what I feel about a subject?
You know,
I
think a question that many times is not asked, you know, we talk about how wonderful the arts are and we talk about how they need to be here for the future, you know, and we talk about like we don't even know what hasn't been created yet. You know, when you were talking about music, I remember watching a program that was talking about like in the 1920s, and somebody had just gotten their very first Victrola. Is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. Everyone gathered around to hear the music. And so, you know, now we listen to, you know, the music, and like who knows what it's going to be, you know, 30 years from now. How will the arts be displayed?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think that one of the questions that I think is important to ask is, you know, why is it important to invest in the arts? You know, why should people do it? Like, you know, of course we know it helps to fund theaters, but why, or to individuals and artists, but why? And, you know, my answer to that is that it really, whether you realize it or not, it builds communities. It helps to have hard conversations that otherwise couldn't be had. So, for instance, if you have a piece of art that is controversial, it allows different conversations in a respectful way to occur. It helps with engagement. You know, we know that, you know, children's academic scores go up because of the arts. You know, we talk about it, you know, sparks creativity that then leads to other ways of fulfilling basic needs. You know, it brings joy to our lives. And so, you know, whether it's $5 or $500,000, I think everybody should have skin in the game and invest in the arts so that they're here forever.
I agree with you. I mean, I absolutely, you know, to think about why the arts, I go back into my childhood and realize how empty my life would be if mm-hmm. the arts had not been put into it, how descending from two wonderful parents who both were in the arts early in their lives and then decided they wanted to have a family. So mm-hmm. that wasn't going to work for them. And not knowing that they just poured into me all of the things that they had left over. And
wow.
Why not? Why not support something that gives you so much joy?
Right.
The music that was constantly playing, the artwork that, you know, Joanne, my Rose Joanne was constantly, she was a beautiful artist, visual art, all of those things, the photography that was all around, all of those things just filled my world so much, and the world of make-believe. The world
That's
of
right.
The world of
That's
theater
right.
is the world of make-believe, and it means right. that anything, if you believe, anything is possible, and that's such a powerful statement. Anything is possible if you
That's
believe.
Right. That's right.
You know, and without that, I believe confidence cannot go into a room and expect people to think that you can turn something on a piece of paper into a piece of art in performance. You must
exactly.
have the confidence in yourself that that's going to happen. And I live by that. I also celebrate those people who can do that. And I try to, you know, if they're nice people, I celebrate them more. But even if they're not so nice, I do celebrate them.
That's
I had
a good
to
way
get
to
that
look
in.
At it.
Because, you know,
That's
unfortunately, we are
at.
In a world where some people aren't as nice as other people. So, you know.
You are right.
Well,
you are right, my friend.
Yes. Well, my friend, we are down now to the last minute of this, and then we're going to go over to our visual. You have
okay.
what you need for the visual, right?
I do.
I'm going to, all right, I'm going to I thank do. You and sign you off. This has been absolutely fabulous. I want to remind my audience that next week I have the power couple of Leon and Brenda Denmark, who are two thespians. I've known Brenda since college, and she is a part of my nonprofit organization, and her husband is an entrepreneur who has led organizations like NEC and many other NJPATs. So they're going to talk about the arts and how it has influenced them. But I will say to you, my dear friend, Jane George, that we are very, very grateful that you are here, that you are a component that stays involved in pushing us to realize how important the arts are in our lives and how important communication is to our community. So I thank you for that.
Thank
you. I look forward to seeing you in a few minutes on the After Show Afterthought. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, you know that this means you're going to hear my playoff music. I thank you for joining us here on Wednesday at 7 p.m. And I invite you to come back next week and join me again. Jane, I will see you in a few minutes. Love you for doing this. And I can't wait to see you and talk a little bit more. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Lenny Godfrey, Straight, No Chaser.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you far away.